Good afternoon, everybody. So what we're going to start off with is just a very brief sketch duel with one person. Joe's going to take questions and requests. Generally what we do is we decide on a character for you to draw, any, whatever you and Mark would like to do, but since Mark has no say in this matter,
I'll anticipate
we're going to let you guys decide. Any requests?
Vampirella.
A Vampirella. What is she? What does she look
Hellboy?
Like?
Hellboy. Vampirella and Hellboy. Anybody
okay.
Else?
Well. All right. Well, it's a big characters. I know that I recognize. This is reference for Hellboy.
What would you like to draw?
I can do a Vampirella.
Vampirella. You guys okay with Vampirella?
Yeah.
Okay.
you just lost a fan. So. What we're going to do is we're going to open the floor. If you guys have any questions for Joe, what I'm going to start with is, what are you working on now?
Well, I'm still doing the Warlord of Mars covers for Dynamite. That's my regular monthly cover gig. And I just love that because I've loved that property since I was a kid. I'm doing I just designed a Thor model kit for Polar Lights, and I'm doing the box art for that when I get home. I'm working on... A company's doing a book on Roddy Piper Monster Killer or something, so I'm doing a couple of covers for that. It sounds absurd, but it should be fun. Miscellaneous convention sketches, private commissions, and there's a potential that we may be revisiting the Marvel Masterpiece license at some point, but we're not sure if the card market is going to be able to handle that at this point because it's not quite as strong as it was when I did the first set, but we're trying to work through that and see if we can get that potentially off the ground for a sort of slightly late 20th anniversary set. So that's the kind of stuff I'm working on right now.
Any questions from the floor? Anybody?
Oh. Yes.
Why'd you decide to start drawing?
Well, my older brother used to draw. My brother's 9 years older than I am. And I used to watch him when I was a kid. He was really, really good, and I wanted to do what he was doing. So one day I borrowed his... You might know what crepas are. Crepas are really cheap sort of oil pastels that they sold in art stores and craft stores when we were kids. And I took his crepas one day, and I drew a picture of Fred Flintstone off of the TV screen and kind of realized I could draw. And I just kind of never stopped. My brother and my father were both into comic books, and there were always comics in the house, and I started to pick them up. And I just decided that's what I wanted to do. It's weird. You just kind of know at some point. And tunnel vision from a very early age, and that's kind of geared myself, Yes, I'm lucky. It's very seldom that you actually get to grow up and do what you wanted to do as a kid. So I feel really, really fortunate that I'm able to do it.
Did you have any formal education?
I went to Art and Design High School in New York City. But they taught basics and fundamentals, and I didn't start to paint until after I graduated. The summer I graduated, I won an award from DC Comics for the best promising, talent or something. And I spent it came with a gift certificate to an art supply store, and I decided I wanted to paint. So I spent the gift certificate on paints and just kind of taught myself to paint. And from there, it's all been trial and error and self-experimentation and teaching myself how to paint, watching how other people did stuff. I'd buy art books that had technique sections in the back to show how people worked, and I tried to incorporate what they did into how I worked. And like I said, it's just been a learning experience for the past 35 years now.
What was the DC competition you had?
It wasn't a competition. It was what companies would sponsor awards for the graduating class every year. So they had awards for fashion design and awards for all kinds of stuff. And I got what was called the DC Comics Award of Excellence in Cartooning. I guess this school submitted 3 or 4 people who they thought were good in the school to DC Comics, and they decided to give me the award. Which is ironic, because in 35 years, I think I've done one cover for DC Comics.
Yes?
What was the cover, maybe we asked?
That I did? I did a Blackest Night cover a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was one of the alternate Blackest Night covers with a bunch of power rings shooting down at them. But that was it. For some reason, I went to Marvel when I first started in the industry when I was 18 because they did painted covers, and I wanted to paint, and DC wasn't doing painted covers back then because Marvel had the magazine line. And I just kind of stayed at Marvel. It just kind of stuck where I was there for probably the first 14 years of my career. And I think I became so associated with the Marvel books that DC, you know, kind of just felt I should stay there.
Yes.
I sold the first painting I ever did. I did when I was 17. One of the sample paintings, the trials I did that summer I graduated high school, and I sold it to Heavy Metal for a cover the following year. So I was 18 when I sold my first cover, but I'd done it when I was 17. And then I went up to Marvel, and I started working for Marvel when I was 18. So I kind of, people ask me how to break into the industry, and I'm like, I don't know. I just kind of, I just kind of happened. But it's ironic because back then there weren't a lot of people doing painted work in comics. And if I broke in now, knowing what I knew then, I wouldn't get any work. You know, I was one of those guys who, there was a drought of people who could do that. And I was kind of paid to learn on the job. You know, I was competing with guys like Earl Norman and Bob Larkin for covers at Marvel. And I had to learn really quickly if I wanted to keep getting work. Anybody else?
Renee's going to take over.
Oh, okay.
What are you doing?
Q&A.
Yes.
Hey guys.
Excuse me.
Is there something you hate drawing?
I don't like using a ruler. I know perspective inside and out. I made sure I learned it, but I like organic stuff. So if I can do anything, like, you know, if I can, like, natural type compositions, I don't mind it. But when you start doing science fiction work, a lot of it is just it's so precise. It kind of takes a lot of spontaneity out of it for me. So I get a little frustrated if I have to do really, like, lots of mechanical stuff. I prefer rocks and horses and animals and, you know, and things like that. Yes?
Is there a particular favorite piece you've done that you really like?
After so many pieces, it's hard to pick a favorite. I like the ones that came out the way they were supposed to. And that's not as common as you might think. You guys see the finished painting. I know a lot of times what I was hoping it would come out like. A lot of the Burroughs stuff that I did, the Tarzan paintings, a lot of those are really nice. I liked a lot of the Vampirella work. The Marvel Masterpiece cards, which are probably the most popular thing I've ever done, weren't great paintings because they were done so quickly. So I'm not as fond of them as other people are. But probably the most work I've ever put into anything and the proudest I am of a finished product is the Tomb Raider book that I painted a few years ago. I put more work into that project than I think anything else I've ever done. And there's nothing I would change about a single panel in that book. So that's probably, I think, the best work I've ever done.
Back
yes.
here.
It was my other interest from the time I was a kid, but they weren't hiring. There was a hiring freeze in New York City, and when I guess I was about 20, they took off this 15-year moratorium on hiring because everybody was retiring, and they needed new cops. So my friends and I took the police test, and I made it. And I had a decision to make. I was working in the business at this point for 3 or 4 years, but I wasn't making a whole lot of work. I was still living at home with my parents. I was 22 years old. And I kind of felt if I didn't do it, I would look back 20 years from now and say, wow, why didn't I try that? Because I really enjoyed, you know, it's something I always had an interest in. And my initial intention was I would do that full time and take my overtime and time instead of cash and do freelance work on the side. Which I ended up doing after my first year. And I just kind of felt after a few years that the art is what I really wanted to do. You know, it's where my passion lied. And it was a big decision to leave and go back into art full-time because it wasn't a regular job with a pension and benefits and everything. But you just have to follow what you feel you need to do. And I also realized that no one ever tried to shoot me for painting a bad picture. So it's probably a little bit safer.
What was your first work you did during that time?
During the
when you were a police officer, the work you would do. On the
well, I was doing Savage Sword covers when I left and went to join the police department. And about a year into it, Larry Hama had taken over as editor of the Savage Sword magazine, and he called me and asked me if I would be interested in doing another cover. Mm-hmm. So there was probably no work by me dated 1983 anywhere. And then I started again, I think, in 1984, or the end of 83. So there might be one cover dated 83.
How much of the book you worked on, Cops, the Job, how much of that was experiences from your police force days?
Yeah, Larry Hama and I wrote a mini-series called Cops, the Job back around 1987, I guess, right? That was a long time ago. And a lot of the characters that are in the book were based on people I knew on the job, and a lot of the things that happened to the characters in the stories happened to me when I was a cop. And the most satisfying part of it, even though the basic story was made up, a lot of the incidents were real, and the interaction between the characters was based on how police actually interacted with each other. And we started to get letters from cops from all over the world who said they picked it up as a joke, you know, because they just thought it was going to be something really stupid, and they were amazed at how realistically it was written and how close the relationships were to what really their relationships were with other police officers. So that was a big compliment that it actually came across when we wrote that.
Yeah. How many of you have seen that series, Cops, the Job?
It was four issues. It kind of came and went. It was during the time when the X-Men was super popular over Marvel, so nobody was really paying attention to this book. And we wrote some stuff into this book that Larry and I were laughing, writing it, going, this is never going to get passed. They're never going to let this get into the book. And it went right through. I mean, we had some raw dialogue and some really ugly stuff that happens in the books. And it was a code book, too, and it just went through. But that really helped with the authenticity of the story, I think.
Yeah, you can find that and the Laura Croft books that he's talking about. You should look for those. They're both fantastic things to have and bring him, bring up to Joe to have him sign.
I wish that in hindsight, I had drawn the cop book, but there was no time to get the book done. So we had an ex-military guy named Mike Harris, who drew the book, and Michael Golden did four incredible covers for the series. So it's a nice package altogether.
Anyone have questions?
Okay, well, they want a Vampirella
okay.
piece, so...
All right,
how do you guys want to do this? You want to see how it starts from start to finish, or... Okay. Basically, I start with a basic gestural outline. I know that the way people are taught is you start with the cubes and everything. After a while, when you sort of know how stuff works, you can just do it with a few simple lines to sort of block in the figure. So I'll basically start... Oh, they're going to put it up there occasionally as I do stuff. It's hard to draw on that thing with that in the way.
This much, you know, it's an 80s style overhead, so it's...
Okay. So it's... Well, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, actually, it's better if I work on an angle. So I'll show you how I basically block in. I get an idea in my head of what I want, and it gets refined a lot as time goes on. But this is really just
There's also a DVD out where Joe does a painting from beginning to end and tells you about the steps along the way called Creator Chronicles. He has it at his table as well.
I've been asked numerous times if I would ever do an instructional painting book, and I always thought that the way I taught myself to paint is so unique to what works for me that it wouldn't be a benefit to anybody. But I've posted a few tutorials online over the past few years, and they seem to be really popular. So I'm thinking that I may end up doing a tutorial painting book just to explain how I work, because I realized that the way I learned was looking at other people's work, and if there was one thing that somebody did that worked for me, and I was able to learn from it, it seemed to be a benefit. So I'm going to give it a shot, I think. See, a lot of what I do is, when I do this stuff, it probably seems like a shortcut, because I took life drawing classes for years. If you're going to learn to draw, I wouldn't learn to draw from comics. I would learn to draw from life, because it helps you so much more with what things really look like. And if you learn to draw from comics, you're copying your favorite artist, whether it's Todd McFarlane or John Buscema or anybody. What you're really learning is second, third generation stylistic approaches to what things look like. So life drawing classes, it helps you learn the figure as it actually is, and then you can sort of like stylize and and deviate from what things actually are more realistically.
Did you already talk about your influences, who the artists were that you...
Not yet, no. We didn't get that far. As I said, early on, we had tons of comic books in the house, and so I would read... There was basically everything in there, from Gold Key Comics to Archie's to Marvel and DC books. And so I read a little bit of everything. But then when I was about 8 years old, there was a kid selling secondhand comics in a playground, and I picked up a couple of copies of Avengers 58 and 59, that first Vision story that John Buscema did, and I saw John's work, and it just blew me away, and I decided that this is what I really wanted to do, and I wanted to be John Buscema, which, of course, was a foolish notion, because the guy is just an absolute genius. But I learned to draw initially by copying his work when I was a kid, and, I down to the point where even when I do sketches now and layouts for figures, a lot of the way I construct figures or pose figures is very reminiscent of how John did it, because that's what I learned. And then after a while, I realized that probably wasn't the smartest thing to do, and I started to take formal life drawing classes to learn how the figure actually worked. So what I'll do is... second. See, initially it's really kind of loose, and I'll refine it as I go along. This is basically just to get doesn't look like much now, but it's enough for me. It's just enough for me to figure out the figure and figure out the general pose that I want to do, and I'll refine stuff as it goes along. And you draw through the figure to make sure that the legs connect. A lot of people don't draw through the figure when they're composing something, so like legs sort of like don't match up and they're not attached properly. And what I'll do from here is I'll start to just work little by little on different parts of the figure, like some of the structural lines that I threw in there. And the thing with drawing women, when you draw women, is the fewer the lines, the better. Because they tend to look old when you start putting lots and lots of detail in. So you have to learn what to put in, what to leave out.
That's especially on the face. Right?
Especially on the face, yeah. It's like a lot of laugh lines and everything. If you start to add all the stuff that's really there, it tends to age the figure considerably. There were guys like Kurt Schaffenberger, who did Lois Lane for years. I mean, if you look at his faces, they're incredibly clean and just the barest minimum of detail as far as facial construction goes. He concentrated on the eyes. He got the shape of the nose down. But if somebody smiled, he used the mouth to show the smile. He didn't show all of the lines around it that would give it the expression. And that takes a little bit of practice to know what to leave out. Because drawing really is about as much what you leave out as what you put in to get something to work.
When you start to draw a face, is there anything that you tend to draw first?
Well, I'll block in all the basic features. I tend to leave the eyes for some reason. I don't know why. I'll draw the entire thing. I'll leave the pupils and the eyes for last. I just get the shape of the eyes in first, which kind of helps me with the expression. And you'll see in a second, I'm tightening up the face a little bit, and you'll see how different it looks from what I just had there. So this is the face now tightened up a little bit, with the features a little bit stronger and a little bit more clarified. And from here, really, you can ink that and start to do all the detail work with the actual pen or the brush. when I was younger, I would draw every single line that I was going to ink, because I was kind of, I wasn't secure enough with the idea that I wouldn't screw up the inking if I didn't have every single line penciled in. And that's just becomes completely redundant and kind of takes the spontaneity out of the drawing a lot of the time.
Do you work with models very much anymore?
I'm a realistic painter, you know, so along the lines of Bomber or McGinnis or Boris. So, yeah, you do need models for stuff if you want it to look realistic. Whether I use models or not really depends on the character that I'm drawing. Obviously, there's no model for Dr. Doom, you know, or something like that. But if I'm doing a realistic figure, models or photo reference doesn't hurt, because the way lighting hits a figure, it really changes with just the slightest shift of light. And while you may have a general knowledge of how lighting hits something, it's very hard to accurately get a figure lit under certain conditions unless you have reference for it. And as far as drawing other elements in a painting, unless you specialize in drawing elephants and that's all you ever draw, you really don't know what an elephant looks like. You think you know what an elephant looks like, but you don't until you draw one and then stick it next to a picture of an actual elephant. And if you're drawing a dragon, you can make up a dragon because no one knows what a dragon looks like. It could look like whatever. But if you make up a lion, people will see it, and they won't be able to tell you why it doesn't look like a lion, but they'll know it doesn't look like a lion because they've seen a lion, you know, before. And while they won't be able to vocalize it, they'll just say that it doesn't look right. So if you want stuff to look the way it has to live, the way it's supposed to look, photo reference is not a bad thing. The only place I've ever heard photo reference being a bad thing is in comics. You know, every magazine illustrator, every Golden Age illustrator, every illustrator from the 50s, every paperback artist has always used photo reference to get stuff to look correct. You know, so it's this whole idea that somehow you're cheating if you use photo reference for something. I think it's hurt a lot of people as far as really learning to draw properly and learning how to draw stuff as it should look. There's a difference between, you know, copying something outright and using photo reference to make sure you have something right. I'll draw all my figures out. If I'm laying out a cover, I'll draw the entire cover out first and get everything almost to a finished drawing, and then I'll use photos then to correct certain things that aren't right. I'll find something that's either, because I've been cutting magazines up since I was 16, and I really learned the value of that when I worked for Howard Chaykin. I got my break in the industry before I sold that first cover by running into Howard Chaykin in a comic book store the summer I graduated high school. And he was looking for an assistant to do some color work on, I believe, Empire was the book he was working on at the time. And he saw this couple of sample paintings I had, and he hired me to be his assistant and do background work and color work and everything. And I learned the value of a clip file. He had file cabinets full of magazine clippings that he would, and every magazine he would cut up, and he had files on castles and files on bridges and files on stairs and files on people laughing and and I just really started to do that. And to this day, a magazine doesn't go through my hands. It doesn't get a razor blade taken to it, and it's stuff cut out and filed away somewhere. And every now and then I'll get a job that has something in it that I'm not familiar with, and I can go through a file and I'll find a picture I cut out 25 years ago that's just been sitting there waiting for me to use to make sure something is right. So clip files and what they used to call photo morgues are invaluable. Every artist had them. Gray Morrow had them. Wally Wood had them. John Buscema had them. Niels had them. So it's an invaluable tool if you're looking to draw something correctly.
I was going to ask you if you still kept a hard clip file, because a lot of people just go to the internet now and use Google. Is it more beneficial for you to have that hard?
It's more beneficial to have a clip file, and especially as old as mine is, because if you go to Google, it's the same image. Everybody has access to the exact same images. So I can't tell you how many times I've seen covers and I've seen the same horse in four different pieces. Mm-hmm. You know, you're very limited as to what's available online. I mean, it's a lot more varied than it used to be, but still everybody has the same access. So it helps to. I raid old bookstores constantly and just picture books. I have more books on dinosaurs or big cats. Or European landscapes and castles and stuff. And if there's one photo in there that I think at one point is going to help me finish a huge painting, it's worth the investment in the book. But yeah, I could not recommend having a good reference library more.
You may have already answered this, but are you self-taught, or did you go to art school?
Yeah, we covered this before. Okay. I'm essentially self-taught. But getting back to the chicken thing, so I was working for Howard, and Howard, I learned all this stuff about the Golden Age illustrators and how they worked, and the value of reference files, and I would watch how he would use it. And Howard is actually the first person who set me up to heavy metal with my samples, because he was doing work for heavy metal at the time. And he said, well, you know, why don't you go up to see Julie Simmons and show her your stuff and see what happens? You know, who knows? And he sent me up to heavy metal, and which opened the door for me, really. I can't say they wouldn't have seen me back then, because it was a lot more, companies were a lot more accessible back then than they are now. It's much more of a closed-door shop now. But based on his word, they saw my work, and they bought the first cover I ever sold was a heavy metal cover. It was a sample painting of a girl holding a saber-toothed tiger head and a sword over her head. And it was a watercolor and ink thing. And they bought it for a cover, which amazed me, because while heavy metal maybe doesn't have the same sort of panache today, in 1977, it was the major fantasy art magazine, and everybody wanted to be in heavy metal. So the fact that my first printed cover ever was in heavy metal was just such a boon. That when I finally went to Marvel, you know, Howard said, well, now that you're on heavy metal, I can send you to Marvel, because you're now published, and you have a better chance of getting work there. So he sent me up to Marvel, and they saw the sample paint, the same three sample paintings I had that I brought up to heavy metal, and they gave me a Starlet cover, which is, wow, it's abominable, looking back on it. But they gave me, they saw some promise in it, and they kept giving me work. They gave me another Starlet cover that Stan Lee, and it's the only cover I've ever had killed. It never saw print. Stan absolutely hated it. And the book came out and had an Earl Norm cover on it. I was like, what happened to my cover? Like, yeah, Stan didn't like it, so he reassigned it. But they gave me more work, and it just went from there. So that's essentially how all that started. So this is now, the figure just tightened up a little bit more. So I've refined proportions and where stuff is going to go. And from here on now, I'll just start to tighten up some of the smaller details,
yeah,
and lay in blacks. Yes, this is. I'll lighten up the pencil lines a little bit, just because it'll hold the ink better. So just stamping it with the eraser takes off the surface layer of graphite.
Are you using a kneaded eraser?
Yeah, it's a kneaded eraser, yeah.
A lot of artists use.
Yeah, you don't really need to. You don't really need to rub and erase. If you just tap it, it's amazing how much it lightens up the figure and takes off the darker structural lines.
What type of graphite do you use?
These are really cheap Bic mechanical pencils. It's probably a number 2 lead. If I'm doing a finished drawing, like a really tight finished drawing for a cover quality painting. What I'll do is I'll do the drawing on tracing paper so I can refine it a bunch of times. I can do overlays and correct stuff. I'm sorry, you hear me or not? And I'll do the drawing on tracing paper. I can move elements around in the composition to make sure it's exactly the way I want it. If something is a little too high or a little too low, it's easier to shift it around and make sure you don't get tangents where things are touching each other. And you can refine the drawing a bunch of times by doing that without erasing the board, because the more you draw and erase on the board, the more you affect the texture of it, and it affects how the paint then lays on the surface, whatever you work in, whether it's canvas or board. I work on an illustration board, and the more you erase and draw, you start to dig holes into the board. So what I'll do is I'll do all of the preliminary work on tracing paper, and then I'll turn it into a transfer sheet. I'll turn it over, and I'll rub a number 2 pencil on the back of it over the drawing. I'll rub it out with my finger and soften it and smooth it out. And then I'll just put it down and I'll trace over the drawing that I have on the tracing paper with a hard 6 or 7 H lead. And it'll give me a nice clean transfer drawing onto the board, at which point I'll go down and then tighten up the drawing with a 2 to 3 H pencil just to make sure I have a nice clean drawing. Because I don't work like you, since I work in acrylics, unlike oils, blocking in the entire painting, I find it to be a detriment. I find it to be confusing. The way my mind works, if I have an entire painting that's half done, it just looks like chaos to me, and I lose I lose the structure of the piece I'm working on. So I'll do the painting, and I'll start from the back. I'll do a really tight drawing, and I'll mask off all of the foreground elements, the figures or whatever thing that is in the foreground, and I'll paint the entire background first. And to pretty much 90% of finish. Some lighting has to be adjusted here and there later on. And then I'll peel off all the masking fluid that I have on over the foreground figures, and then paint the figures into the painting, because I find it easier to light the figures to the background than the other way around. You know, I'm always amazed that people can paint the figure first and then paint the background around the figure later, because how do you know how to light the figure until the background is done? I used to think that I was odd, but I know the Hildebrands work that way. I know there are a few other people who work that way, where they paint the figures last. And I've always done it that way. And I can kind of see it in my head, and I just kind of know by having the drawing done, you know. I don't do color comps. I don't like color comps because I think they take the spontaneity again out of the painting, and it kind of locks you into a color scheme. And paintings evolve. You know, I know basically what color is going to go where and what value is going to be in the painting. But as you paint stuff, it does. It shifts and it changes, and it takes on a life of its own. The closest I've probably ever come to what I originally envisioned in my head with the finished painting is maybe 75%, because it does change and morph as you're working on it. Getting back to the original question, I use anywhere from a 2H, a number 2 pencil just for blocking stuff out, to a 2 or 3H pencil for the tight finished drawing. You know, for sketches and stuff, a regular pencil is fine, because most of the drawing is done with the ink to begin with. So what I'll do is I'll take a fine pen, and I'll start, now that I have the structural lines down, you can clean up whatever you have here. Is anybody here in art school now or taking classes? No, are you? Are you? I know that since I grew up in New York City, there's a place called the Art Students League that used to give life drawing classes and stuff all the time, and you can sign up for it. And they had tons of models and everything that would come in, and mostly Saturday classes you would go to in addition to whatever studies you had taken. Do you have any access to anything like that where you are?
To some degree,
yeah. Because I really, again, I can't emphasize enough the importance of life drawing classes for anybody who wants to learn how to draw figures. Because if you notice the old time guys, the guys who worked in the 40s and the 50s in comics and they could draw anything, and they knew how to drape clothing. They could drape a suit and make it look authentic. They can drape a jumpsuit or a dress or a party dress or a cocktail dress, and everything, all the folds and all of the lighting and the structure was all completely accurate, because they made it a point to learn how to draw real people. You know, you can't exaggerate anything until you know how to draw real people. And if you learn how to drape clothing, then you can drape a cape convincingly. So it's real important not to just focus on drawing the fun stuff, you know, as it were. It's learning to draw the stuff, the everyday stuff, is really what makes the superhero guys look superhero-y, because there's real life sort of things around them.
It's true. When I was an editor at Marvel Comics, the artists that I would look for when I was reviewing portfolios are the ones that grasp that you really need to know how to draw everyday things as well as, you know, superheroes. And like Joe's saying, even with the superhero bodies, you have to understand how the human body works before you can exaggerate something. And yeah. The best way to do that is with life drawing classes and studying anatomy.
And as I said, if you're learning to draw by copying your favorite comic book artist, he's already stylized what he's learned about realistic figures into what works for him. So what you pick, and he's also making mistakes. So you're picking up his mistakes as well as the stuff he knows right. So while everybody starts by trying to emulate their favorite artist, the ones who are really the most successful are the guys that sort of realize early on that you have to sort of learn to do it for yourself. It's okay to have a little bit of somebody's idiosyncrasies in your work if you you know, deviate enough from it to make it your own.
You mentioned that you do transfers. Do you ever compare your work to a mirror to make sure it's okay?
Well, it's a tracing paper. Yeah, I'll turn the tracing paper over and look at it from the opposite side, because it's amazing how much you'll see that balance is off in something that you thought looked right, because you're so used to looking at it from one side. There's a science fiction illustrator named John Berkey, who for years did these incredible spaceship drawings and spaceship paintings and tons of TV guide covers he did, just all kinds of stuff, really proficient and amazing, amazing painter. And his studio setup always amazed me, because he had his drawing table set, his big giant drawing table set up, but he also conceived this system of mirrors where he was able to just look up, and he had a 2 or 3 mirror prism thing that he set up where he's actually seeing the painting above him reversed, and he can check while he's painting to see that everything is in balance. I mean, that seemed incredibly complicated, but it worked for him, and I was always amazed that he was able to put that thing together. But he was always checking to make sure that the balance on things were accurate. You know, and as far as models go and learning how to draw stuff correctly, they always tell you that hands are probably the hardest thing to draw, hands and feet. But there's no excuse not to be able to draw a decent hand, because they're right here. You know, so it's you know, don't be afraid to look at your own hand, to take a picture of a hand. Cell phones make that really easy now. I did a painting recently for Dejathoris, and there's a big hand in the foreground holding a sword hilt. And I just grabbed something with my hand, a Bowie knife or something I had in the studio, and just took a cell phone shot of my own hand. And I had a reference for the hand then, you know, to make sure it was accurate. I mean, it's anything that you're an illustrator, and your job is to get the job done, to make it look right, and to get it in on time. Drew Struzan, everybody here knows who Drew Struzan is? Movie poster artist, Star Wars movie posters, Raiders of the Lost Ark movie posters. Drew worked exclusively from photos, and in his DVD, he talked about how obviously he knows how to draw, or you couldn't use the photo properly. A lot of people who say, "All right, well, you use photos." Not as easy as you think it is, because you have to be able to understand what you're looking at in order to be able to use that photo for reference. And if you don't understand what you're seeing, how many people have used photos? It's 1:45.
Okay.
How many people? This is now just starting to block in a cleaner line to delineate the figure a little bit more. You know, and you have to have the knowledge to be able to decipher what's in that photo. You know, to decipher where the eyes go and where the mouth goes and the different parts of the mouth and the different planes of the nose. It's all stuff that you need to know in order to use any of that stuff accurately. Try and rush through this a little bit more. Let's see if I can get this done. Sorry if I'm rambling.
Does anyone have any questions so far?
Joe, you mentioned Deja, and you mentioned Bushima and Frazetta. You have an affinity for swords and sorcery?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I was totally into superheroes. You know, because John Buscema was my hero, and he was doing the Avengers, and he was doing the Silver Surfer, and, you know, I liked all the 60s guys who worked at Marvel. And then I wasn't really much into sword and sorcery or fantasy until John took over the Conan book. I had never really even heard of Conan until that point. And I picked up the Conan book simply because John was drawing it. And once I realized what that was, it kind of changed my entire outlook and my interest on things I wanted to do. And then when I was a junior in high school, the first Frazetta book came out, that Fantastic Art of Frank Frazetta from Ballantine. And I'll never forget what a revelation that book was to everybody at that time. And there was a whole black market in art and design going on with people who were stealing the books from different bookstores and selling them in the high school, because everybody wanted one. So that became a big influence on me as far as the type of work I wanted to do. My interests change over the years. I still like fantasy and sword and sorcery. I've been doing it for so long now that I'm also a big fan of wildlife art. I love big cats, and I'd love to be able to take a couple years off and just do big cat paintings, you know, take a photo safari to Africa and just shoot my own reference photos. And I'm a big fan of guys like John Siri Lester and Robert Bateman and a guy named Simon Combs, who's my all-time favorite, who was killed recently by a Cape buffalo while he was on a photo safari to shoot reference for his paintings. But I love that stuff. I prefer, while I do superheroes, my preferred genres are the more reality-based ones. I kind of like the adventure type stuff. That's why I love the Tomb Raider book or the Tarzan stuff. I'm a big film noir guy. I love film noir books, and I really wish I was around to do 60s paperback covers because I love all those 60s noir pulpy paperback covers. My interests vary considerably, as my influences have over the years. You know, I've gone from comic book guys to painters, to 50s and 60s illustrators, down to now. It's Western artists and, you know, fine art guys. It varies. You can never stop learning, and if you lock yourself into really being influenced by any one genre or any one artist, you kind of stifle yourself. You know, I very seldom look for any kind of inspiration or anything from inside comics anymore, because I kind of know all the guys that are in there now, and I've been exposed to all of it, so I'm always looking for something else to sort of spark a little bit of interest and learn a little bit more.
Yes?
Yeah.
Has the advent of digital affected your process?
It didn't affect my process. It affected my work for a while. As soon as digital became the in thing about 10-15 years ago, when they started to do the flare cards up at Marvel and everything, and they were talking about how it was going to make painted art obsolete, even though they were like some of the most garish, horrible things you've ever seen. It's changed the way it changed the market a lot. You don't see painted movie posters anymore. You know, they're all computerized headshots because they're selling the actor and not the movie anymore. So the art of movie posters is a dead art, which is such a shame. Because that's the one thing I've always wanted to do. I'm a frustrated movie poster artist. I was born probably a generation too late to do what I really want to do. Because I'm always had a knack for likenesses. And I love the idea of doing movie posters. And some of those guys were just incredible. The guys who did the brilliant illustrations in 50s and 60s posters. There were no album covers. There's no art anymore on album covers because they're all this big now. So it's all headshots of artists. TV Guide doesn't exist anymore. There was a trifecta for illustrators in the 70s. It was Sports Illustrated, Time Magazine, and TV Guide. And if you made those covers, you were a top-notch professional illustrator. And none of them use illustration anymore. It's all photos or CGI stuff. So it's affected the market an awful lot. I like the tactile feel of painting. I actually like creating something. I like knowing how to mix a color and apply it and get a texture by hand instead of hitting, you know, one from column A, two from column B. And I like having a finished piece of art when I'm done because I'm lucky enough to have a decent collector market, which really is how I survive at this point, because the rates in the industry, because circulation, because of the digital age, has really reduced itself so much. Rates aren't what they used to be. In most cases, they're half of what they were 20 years ago. So if I went digital, I'd be living under a highway fighting cats for chicken bones. You know? So it just wouldn't work for me and how my career is structured. I have nothing against it, and I'd be curious to learn it, but only to help maybe enhance a piece that I've already done. You know, I can scan stuff and piece stuff together in Photoshop and add a little, you know, clean up paintings and stuff like that. But I've never really taken the time to learn how to paint digitally because I just don't think I'm ever going to need it. You know, simply because I guess I'm a dinosaur and I like painting.
Yeah, you'll have artwork on walls and in gallery shows in the future, whereas digital artists won't.
But I've noticed that over the past few years now, there's more of an interest in bringing back painted art because I think they realize that the guys who paint kind of know what they're doing. And it's not, the digital stuff isn't unique anymore. The painted art is unique and adds interest to what companies are publishing. So I've after a dry spell of a few years where work, I was making most of my money off of private commissions and such, companies are now starting to commission painted work again. It's not as plentiful as it used to be, and the pool of talent that they'll use for that kind of stuff isn't very broad anymore. So the fact that I stuck it out and I'm still here kind of leaves me in that small pool of people who you know they still call when they need painted stuff, which is kind of nice.
Are you glad it's not a spec market anymore where investors were buying work instead of fans?
That didn't affect me as much as anything else. The spec market was great for us because companies were selling more books and they were paying better rates. So if somebody wants to go out and buy 6 million copies of a comic tomorrow so it bumps up my page rate, wouldn't happy to have them do it. But I guess from a collector's point of view, it wasn't great because there was, you know, X-Men number one is 6 million copies of X-Men number one, and it's not worth anything these days. But from a business point of view, as far as we go, it was a boom for us as far as rates in the industry went. As soon as that died, rates really just kind of plummeted. And there are a lot of guys now who were getting tons and tons of work years ago who were kicking cans around because there's just not as much work to go around anymore because circulation is down and people just aren't, they're not commissioning as much work anymore.
Yes?
What do you think about the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and also Actor Hero Initiative?
I think Hero is an incredible organization that was long overdue. It's an industry where there's no union, there are no benefits, and a lot of these guys who work themselves to death for years and years and years, and we're now up in their 80s and 90s, or younger guys who have health issues, can use the help. Anything that Hero ever needs, I'll be more than happy to help them with. The Legal Defense Fund, it helps because. It's still a fairly misunderstood industry in a lot of cases, and it's always nice to have somebody who can help you out because a lot of these guys who end up in trouble for things that they shouldn't be in trouble for can't afford legal representation to get them out of it. So, yeah, there are organizations that are desperately needed within our industry. So this is now just the start, just taking a fairly broad chisel marker to block in the hair and a little texture on the costume. Yeah, I can do this in 10 minutes. Anybody else?
Joe, you draw very well, but most of your work is painted. Would you like to do something drawn?
You mean as far as sequential work?
Yes.
I like sequential work, but I'm a painter, and my attention span. One of the reasons I went into painting is because my attention span is about that long. So I'm always impressed by guys who can draw the same thing over and over again and still have the enthusiasm to do the same thing. You know, from Kirby to Mike Mignola, who just do, you know, the same stuff and just show such passion for it. If I do the same thing more than twice, I start to lose my mind. I've done sequential work from time to time, simply because I like the idea of doing sequential work. But I find that by page five, I'm already pulling my hair out because it's a different mindset. With painting, you approach each new image as a completely separate job, with a completely separate thought process, completely different color scheme. And with comics, you have to maintain a train of thought and keep it consistent from image to image. And that's, again, one of the ways my mind doesn't work, and it frustrates me. So as much as I like doing sequential work, and every now and then I'll scratch that itch, it's not really what I think I'm suited for.
Guys in the past, like Golden, were you a fan of them?
I grew up on the guys from the '60s, and then there were the '70s. The '70s guys that came up, and I was already working by that point, so I wasn't quite as much of a fan at that point as I was from the older guys. But I watched everything that came out, and definitely there were guys today that I love, and there were, you know, as much as I love the guys from the '60s. But nothing, since I do it for a living now, a lot of the magic of it is gone, and I kind of know how stuff is done now, so it doesn't have quite the same magic to me that it used to have, because now it's my job, and you lose that sort of sense of awe. But there are guys. I'm always impressed with guys who don't think the way I do. You know, I love guys like Sean Phillips. I love Mignola's stuff. Guys who if I could do it, I'm not impressed by it. You know, Golden's another guy whose work blows me away because I just don't think like him, and I watch him draw, and it's like, kind of like he has a Rolodex in his head, and it's he just sees it in his head and it comes out on paper. It's fairly amazing to watch.
What were your experiences like dealing with Buscema and Frazetta when you finally were able to meet them?
It's funny, because John was the guy that I grew up admiring, the couple times I had a chance to meet him up at Marvel, I was completely tongue-tied and just didn't know what to say to him. So I kind of sat there in the office when he was delivering Weird World pages and just listened to him talk about to the editors about stuff, and I just never said anything to him, which I look back on now as a missed opportunity, because now that he's gone, I really wish I had. Meeting Frazetta was an experience for me because I had no idea he even knew who I was. And we were out in San Diego one year, and somebody came over to me and told me that Frank wanted to meet me. I was like, "Well, Frank who?" And they're like, "Well, Frank Frazetta." And I was like, "Oh, wow, I can't." Okay, so I went over there really, really nervous, kind of like a little kid. And he spent an hour just telling me how much he liked my work, and he thought it was some of the best stuff out there. And we talked about Brooklyn and baseball and just all kinds of stuff. I bought a drawing. He was selling drawings. At the Christie's booth, and I bought a save with a lioness drawing that he had up on the wall, and he was signing them as you bought them. So he leaned over and he starts to sign the piece, and it says "Best regards to Joe," and he stopped and he looked at me and he went, "I don't do this sort of thing. A terrific artist. Best wishes, Frank Frazetta." So I've got that hanging over my drawing table at home, and I don't care if nobody else ever likes my work. You know, that was enough for me. So it's that kind of stuff where you were kind of revert back to being 6 years old and being in your room, you know, painting stuff or drawing stuff, hoping to do this for a living one day. And now here you are all these years later and you're sort of friends with these guys who you know, you admired and who inspired you. It's odd. It's an odd feeling sometimes because I still think of myself as that 12-year-old kid who's in that room, you know, trying to draw and learn, you know, and do this for a living.
We're going to do the draw now, folks.
Okay, this is kind of rusty for him, but that's pretty much the finished piece, except for the eyeballs, of course, which I always forget. So here, throw some eyeballs in.
Signature.
Throw some eyeballs in.
All right. Get your tickets ready so I can compare the numbers. All right, I have one. Number
0653442.
Oh.
Yes.
Hey.
That's
awesome.
Guys, we have a winner. A big round of applause for you.